Hi everyone, and welcome to season 2 of the Everyday Activist podcast. If you're new here, my name is Eugenia Chow, and I run the Instagram account Ugrenia. The Everyday Activist podcast is founded under the belief that there's no one-size-fits-all approach to activism, and anyone can get involved. For this episode, we have Kazaya Harrisano, the founder and director of Project Pusaka. This is an organization that seeks to address the environmental, social, and economic challenges faced by Indigenous communities in the Philippines through permaculture. She is also a recognized climate reality leader and an international youth Philippine ambassador. Currently, she is a junior taking politics, philosophy, and economics in the King's College, New York, with interests in social entrepreneurship and economic development. In this episode, we discuss Project Pusaka, the importance of community autonomy, her experience as an international youth Philippine ambassador, the importance of intersectionality, youth advocacy, and ecofeminism. I had the honor of connecting with Kazaya through the Asian Environmental Youth Network, and it's been amazing to see all the initiatives she's involved with. And recently, she was also listed as a 2020 honoree in the environment category of the Conversationalist Annual Awards Initiative. This honors an inclusive group of Gen Zers across 10 categories who are using their voices for good, and it's no surprise that Kazaya was nominated for this award. It was really empowering to learn about Kazaya's involvement with the environmental movement at such a young age, and I hope that, just like myself, you will be inspired by this conversation. Hi, Kazaya, and welcome to this episode of the Everyday Activist podcast. I'm so excited to talk to you all about your different initiatives and work in the environmental movement today. So firstly, could you please introduce yourself? How would you describe your work? Where are you from? And what is your environmental narrative?
Okay, so I'm Kazaya Harrisano. My family and my close friends call me KZ, which is Kazaya for short. I am a native from Dimaguete City, Philippines, where I grew up most of my life, but currently I study in the King's College in New York as an international student majoring in PPE, which stands for Politics, Philosophy, and Economics. But aside from a student, which is actually the most interesting part of my life, I do humanitarian work on the Sustainable Development Goals, especially SDG 13, which is climate action, SDG 1, no poverty, and SDG 11, which is sustainable cities and communities, where I take on leadership roles in various international organizations. So regarding my environmental narrative, growing up in the Philippines, I have experienced the effects of climate change, whether it be tropical cyclones, flash floods, air pollution, and water pollution. At that time, I knew that we were facing a generational crisis, but I learned to accept the circumstances at an early age. In fact, I thought the only way out was adaptation, and there was nothing we can do against this phenomenon. However, in February 2019, during the 23rd session of the UN Youth Assembly, I met climate reality, where I was aware of the broad range of solutions towards the climate crisis, like the power of youth and renewable energy. Thus, the event became the catalyst of my work as a climate activist. In fact, I also changed my major from nursing to international relations. And when I tell this story to people, a lot of them get shocked by the shift, because nursing and IR, or humanitarian work, I would say in specific, are nowhere related to each other. But then I recently realized, and it's also something that I want to share to people listening, is that I realized through my experiences that the ability to be resilient and find interest and passion in whichever task a person is given is a great skill to have navigating life's uncertainties, especially now during the COVID pandemic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think I saw that you were nominated recently for being a climate reality, one of the most involved climate reality youth leaders. Is that correct?
Oh, yes. I guess that was for Earth Day 2020.
Okay, yeah, perhaps it was that. So I guess how have you so far use that knowledge that you have gained from that training in your everyday life and also on campus and also just in general impacting others?
So since the event in the youth assembly, I started a chapter in my school for climate reality. And since then, I became the chapter chair where I did activities in school, put on events, brought in speakers, and did the 100% campaign, which was basically, I started the 100% campaign, which was basically asking the school to transition to 100% renewable energy. And since then, I got involved with a lot of organizations that also revolve their mission with climate, especially Team Project 54, in which right now I'm in their board of directors. And you know, these opportunities, like it's like a step process leading towards the NGO that I just founded, which is Project Busaka.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So I guess, could you discuss your involvement with Project Busaka? So what is the mission behind this initiative? And I guess anything you want to share about this project?
Back in 2019, Project Busaka used to be called the Regla Project. Regla meaning menstruation in the Filipino language. Since I started working on the SDGs, I knew I wanted to create a project involving Indigenous communities, because in the region that my parents live in the Philippines, which is Sambuanga Sibugay, Indigenous communities are discriminated. They are labeled as stupid, and their culture is also endangered, meaning that a lot of new generation reject their Indigenous identity due to the social phenomenon. But after my mentorship with the program with Global Changemakers in last year, actually in August, I decided to relaunch and refocus the mission and make it more human-centered. Actually, Project Busaka in Sabanan language means inheritance. Its mission is to empower the Indigenous Sabanan community by providing them with a sustainable source of living through permaculture. I formed this organization through intense research and interaction with the community through countless calls in Messenger. I was also able to conclude that the main challenge faced by the people is in regards to their agricultural source of living, in that they experience drought and find it hard to grow their own food, also with the lack of government support. Therefore, after this, the next step that I took was to conduct a survey, like asking them what was happening, like what are also, aside from the agricultural source of living, what are the other challenges that they were facing? And one of the things that I saw was that because it was hard to grow their own food and provide a source of living for themselves and their family, their next resort was to join terrorist groups in exchange for guns. And of course, this is a big problem because it disrupts the peace building in the community, and especially in the local region. So as I worked with families, I heard countless of stories also on how terrorism in the region is causing deaths of their relatives. The reason why I chose permaculture to empower these communities affected by climate change and the social phenomenon is because of its philosophy and principles. I don't know if you're aware of permaculture or have heard it in any way before. But I did came across permaculture just last year during my work with Team 54, and after hearing about its mission towards the planet, particularly its philosophy to the planet, the people, and the community, I knew that it had the potential of changing the status quo of the Indigenous community. Not only will it instill innovative approaches to agriculture, but it also has the capacity to develop a sustainable income-generating business that can be passed on from generation to generation. I just want to reiterate again that Busaka means inheritance, because this project, and this is our long-term goal and our long-term vision is that this project and the business that will be created will serve as an inheritance of the Sabanan community to their next generation, so that they won't have to experience the same environmental and social challenges faced by the community at present.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's a really fitting name. I like that you, I guess, took on the risk of rebranding the whole project as well, just to fit your mission more appropriately. I think that ended up working really well.
Thank you.
So from what I'm aware, you're currently based, well, not currently, but you, for school, you're based in New York, in the US, and obviously the Project Pusaka is involved with people in the Philippines. So how do you continue your involvement with this initiative while you are in a different country?
Well, that's actually one of our biggest challenges regarding communication and time zones. I was the only one who created Project Pusaka. Like, there wasn't anyone. I only had the guidance of my mentors and consultations from the Sabanan people in general, especially communicating a lot with the vice president of Project Pusaka right now, who is Psyche Amori, who is a Sabanan woman. I created the organization remotely, and we tackled the challenges that we face regarding communication and time zones through constant engagement and facilitating lifelong friendships, in which the team help each other grow in various aspects of our lives, whether it be mentally, socially, financially, or professionally in any way. And as of the moment, we are currently training volunteers online as well, in which it's going great, where they will go out soon to families and disperse the information regarding permaculture. And we partner with an organization called Solution Permaculture, where they created specific modules for us in regards to the current situation, as we know that this is kind of unique regarding that it involves a lot of like terrorist activities. So we kind of have to be careful with that as well. And this was also made possible with my family's prominent background in business and politics in the region, which led to partnerships with the local government and local businesses.
I see. And so when you do go to the Philippines, do you often engage with the Sabanan people and the people that you are supporting with this initiative?
The last time I was in the Philippines was 3 years ago. And at that time, I wasn't really an advocate. I was just like a young girl, like floating around, navigating her way through life. Uh-huh. But I plan to go back perhaps when the pandemic resides, hopefully during this summer, like 2021, May or June, and actually immerse myself there with the community, and just implement the project the way it was supposed to be made.
Mm-hmm. So, sorry, when did you begin this project officially?
Just for Project Pusaka, we officially launched it in, I think it was September 2020, just a couple months ago. Yes.
Okay. So I guess it's hard to measure the impact in such a short amount of time, but how have you seen the project affect the community so far? And I guess, are there any measurable things that you've noticed?
So in regards to the impact, I guess I would say that it's more of like the hope. Because before we even started talking about having a project or initiative towards their community, a lot of people were like, you know, we don't even know what we're fighting for. Like, the next day we just see our neighbor getting shot because apparently they were recruited by the terrorists. And of course, the government doesn't support that. So, you know, these people are considered vulnerable. And also, like, in schools, children are discriminated, like, even by the teachers themselves. They're called stupid, so they don't even want to go to school. Instead, they just want to work. So a lot of them are just in this sphere of uncertainty where they don't even know what to do, like what they just live each day not knowing what's going to happen. Like anything can happen, anyone can die. It's kind of like that. But since we started the project and word came out about Project Pasaka, a lot of them had hope. And for me, hope is very important when it comes to changing the world, because every action or every source of change begins with hope. And through that, I believe that this year, 2021, we'll be able to implement it in a very effective way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and definitely I'm hopeful that you'll be able to do that as well.
Thank you.
So you grew up in the Philippines, yeah?
Yes, I did grow up in the Philippines.
So did you move to the U.S. for high school or was it just for university?
I did study in the U.S. before moving here for college. I did study here for 3 years, mm-hmm. for 7th to 10th grade, but I came back here again to study for college.
Okay. I guess when you were still living in the Philippines, you weren't as involved with environmental issues, but I was just wondering if living in the U.S. has changed or transformed your understanding of these issues, and have you been able to apply this newfound knowledge to different projects you're working on?
Actually, that's a great question. As I've mentioned, I've been living in the U.S. for about 3 years now, and one of the things that I realized was that here, there's an abundance of resources and opportunities. Although it's quite limited for international students. Wait, are you an international student by any chance?
Yes. Yeah. I'm also going to be.
Okay.
So.
Okay. So, you know, the struggles of finding internships and scholarships.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So, although we face limited opportunities and resources, it's still definitely more than what is present in the Philippines, or I would say Hong Kong. Correct me if I'm wrong. Also, one of the reasons why I was able to gain the support of many regarding my environmental projects is because of my resourcefulness. This skill actually allowed me to create opportunities for me that I didn't know even existed. It allowed me to broaden my network and my knowledge regarding environmental issues as well. In fact, being a climate leader and working with climate reality itself is such a great honor and opportunity because it allowed me to take action with immense support as well. Aside from that, it also helped me deliver desired outcomes towards recognizable impact. And I know that a lot of us here feel limited and that we don't have the same privileges and opportunities with others, especially being a young person or a woman in general. But through my experience, one of the most important lessons that I want to share is that the roadblocks that we encounter doesn't really mean the end of a journey, but means that one has to pivot. Sometimes we have to do everything in our will and confidence to make things work, to open doors. Through the right mindset, motivation, and method, one can definitely achieve anything, no matter how ambitious the goal may be. And if something doesn't work, perhaps you might have to change your mindset, or your motivation, or your method, or perhaps all three. So, yeah.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that. That's very inspiring. So,
thank you.
You also mentioned how your first encounter or the sort of turning point for you in realizing the severity of the climate crisis was through growing up in the Philippines as well and being subject to droughts and also other unnatural disasters. So, I was.
Yeah.
If the climate crisis is framed differently, in your opinion, in the Philippines as compared to when you're in the U.S.?
I guess based on my experiences, the way the climate crisis is seen in country and in different in both countries is very different, considering that, and one of which, like, the main difference is that here in the US there's a lot of climate deniers, and that was one of the most frustrating experiences I've had as a climate activist, because they would say, oh, climate change is not happening, oh, like it's a hoax, like the world is just going through another big phase just like the ice age. And it took me a lot of time to actually frame these views in such a way that, you know, it doesn't put me down. And I guess one of the ways that I realized, or I guess I've developed to cope up with these, is that, you know, when we talk about the climate crisis, there's different aspects that we can talk about, whether it's politics, whether it's businesses. But for me, one of the most important conversations that we should have regarding the climate crisis is asking the question, how does it affect humanity? How does it affect people in developing countries like the Philippines, where they see the climate crisis as part of their everyday life, where they don't even have, like, you know, options such as renewable energy? Like, it's very limited, and the only way to survive is through adaption.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's especially pertinent when most of the emissions aren't even coming from these countries that may not have access to renewable energy or all these other solutions, yet they're facing the brunt of the climate crisis just because of how they're positioned as well. But so I've seen you've been very involved politically with the UN and also as an International Youth Philippine Ambassador. So I was wondering what your experience has been like as that, and what kind of first steps do you hope to see implemented in the near future regarding these issues?
Okay, so I was appointed as International Youth Philippine Ambassador last year, where I attended monthly trainings and we were given case studies that align with certain SDGs, and it's like different each month. And one of the best parts of being the IY Philippine Ambassador was getting formal training by Dr. Paula Fellingham herself, which later became my personal mentor. One of the things that I also did as the ambassador was representing the Philippines in various international conferences, like the United Nations General Assembly every September or October each year, and World Bank and IMF meetings, where I got to meet stakeholders like Nobel Peace Prize laureates and notable people like the Queen of Belgium herself. I also had the chance to contribute to the drafting of various UN outcome documents, like the Youth Climate Declaration and the UN Decade on Ecosystem Restoration, superheaded by UNICEF, UNEP, and UNFPA. So basically, my experience broadened my knowledge, my network, and it also gave me a lot of realizations of what it means to be human, what it means to live, and what it means to have a purpose in life in general. And in regards to the skills and knowledge, as I've said before, I developed communication skills. And one of the things I learned is the importance of having a diverse team, considering that you have to interact with a lot of people coming from different cultures and nationalities, where they have their own communication styles, they have their own views as well. And I feel like that's very important nowadays when you, especially if you want to work towards certain advocacy, like for example, climate, it has to be intersectional. It has to take into consideration people from different countries, people from different backgrounds as well. And one of the things that I hope to see and implement in the near future is to increase the Filipino representation in the international platform, because what I've realized is that there aren't that much Filipinos, and I was just one of the lucky ones who had the capacity and like the resources and the support as well to attend these conferences, because I was here in the US, so it was just like a train ride or like a bus ride, as opposed to like spending $1,000 for, you know, for travel expenses. And I also believe that, and I also believe that us Filipinos in general, we have a lot of creative solutions, most especially on how we tackle climate change. And also we have a lot to learn from the international community.
Yeah, definitely. So how did you gain access to attend these conferences in the first place? You said you were appointed to be the international ambassador, but what was this process like? I'm very curious.
So I would say that it boils down to resourcefulness and dedication. if you want to, like, attending big international conferences like the General Assembly of the United Nations, the World Bank and IMF meetings, in order to be a delegate at these meetings, you would need to have like sort of a letter allowing to represent an organization, or you have to be a head of organization, that an established organization. And one of the things, like, as a fresh ambassador, one of the things that I've always dreamed of was to attend the UNGA. I was like, oh my gosh, I want to see presidents of countries. Like, I want to see how everything works. So I had that in my mind for a long time. And now I was like, you know what? I have this opportunity. So I'm going to take this opportunity and I'll do what I can to represent the organization that I'm in. So I did a lot of emails exchanging to the director of the Wait a minute, there's a plane. So I did exchange a lot of emails with the executive director, and which eventually led me to talking to the CEO and the founder, which is Dr. Paula herself. And, you know, I told her about my story. I told her about my dedication in really wanting to attend these conferences and, you know, just having that whole experience. And in the end, I had her support. She wrote me a letter and I submitted it to the UN and the World Bank later on, which became approved. And yeah, that's how it happened.
Well, congratulations. That sounds like a lot of effort you put into attending these, and your dedication definitely shines through.
Thank you.
Were you representing Project Pusaka, or was there another organization you were there on behalf of?
I was representing the International Youth Parliament itself, like the organization that hosted me as International Youth Philippine Ambassador. I represented the whole organization itself.
Okay, that's super cool. So you mentioned how there needs to be more diversity on these, not only the panels, but also these policy decisions need to be taking into account different perspectives as well. And you also talk a lot about woman empowerment on your page. So on the note of this diversity, but also intersectionality, I was wondering if you could talk a bit about how feminism overlaps with environmental issues and why it's important for our activism to be intersectional.
Yes, I do talk about woman empowerment, especially on Instagram. And recently I've been talking about ecofeminism and feminism, the intersectionality of feminism in general. But I do want to focus on ecofeminism itself. It is a movement that started actually in the mid-1970s that talks about the oppressions faced by women in relation to the environmental crisis. And the last time I checked Google, almost half of the world population is women. However, around the world, not all women have the same opportunities and rights as men. Like, as we know, not like men have more pay than women, and women, they're not treated the same in the workplace as well. In regards to climate change, women are considered as one of the most vulnerable communities as they are disproportionately experience its impacts through the inequalities they face. However, if women unite, rise up, and empower each other, thus me talking about self-care, empowering one another, and having ambitious goals on Instagram, I believe that we have the capacity to achieve peace and a sustainable future. It is also important for our activism to be intersectional. Because take, for example, climate activism. You cannot talk about environmental justice without racial justice. People of color experience the effects of climate change more as they live in vulnerable areas and experience the lack of resources. Furthermore, as someone who have worked in line with the SDGs, every issue intersects with the other, like how climate change intersects with poverty, quality, education, life below water, peace and injustice, and etc.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I don't know if you've seen the Project Drawdown before?
No, is that a documentary or a movie?
No, it was a study, one of the most comprehensive climate solution studies conducted, where they outlined the most effective solutions in terms of drawing down carbon. And actually, education and educating women specifically was one of the top listed solutions, just because of the impacts of like empowering women that trickles into so many other spheres as well, and that can lead to reducing carbon emissions and also reducing the impact of climate change in the long run as well, just because of how much women can do when they are equipped to do so, which I thought was really interesting.
Yeah, that's actually true. And going back to one of my mentors said, is that, you know, not to be biased on women or on men or anything, but by nature, women are caretakers. Like how you bring a child, like in a house, women are the ones who take care of the kids in general. And they just have that nature of just taking care of everything and making sure that it's in the right place. And I don't know how to describe it, but it's just in the nature of women.
Mm-hmm. Like, I guess ecofeminism is also about applying that the qualities of femininity to how we respond or treat the environment around us as well, right?
Yeah, so that's actually true. And one of the things that I was definitely alarmed with, based on like my previous researches, was that a woman throughout her lifetime generates about 200 to 500 pounds of trash from her menstruation. Mm-hmm. And that ends up in landfills and, you know, the ocean. And it's kind of like, you know, condoms are giving out for free while menstruation pads aren't. And there aren't even sustainable options or like eco-friendly options in the market available. So it's kind of like where's the justice there? Mm-hmm. Like, we want to be sustainable, but at the same time, like, there aren't products available. So yeah,
but that's why I really appreciate how there are a lot of small businesses emerging that are aiming to tackle this issue of unsustainable menstruation or just lack of access to menstrual products. Where they have that buy one, give one model, and also just like creating more sustainable options like menstrual cups and also those like period underwear. And reusable pads and stuff. And that's always really exciting to see becoming more commonplace as well.
That is true. Yeah.
But yeah, so do you ever feel as if your advocacy is taken less seriously as a woman or as a youth? If so, how do you approach this?
I would say not necessarily. That's what my heart says. But I think that's because I'm a very optimistic person. Although in the past I did experience, but you know, looking at reality, I did experience many times where I was the youngest in the room, a woman of color, someone studying at a community college in a room full of Ivy League PhD and professionals. Mm-hmm. So of course there's that feeling of insecurity, inadequacy, and you know, saying that I'm not supposed to be here. However, I didn't really see this as a downer, that's a thing. But I saw it as an opportunity to grow and prove to these people that my voice matters. Also, if I wasn't able to experience this, I wouldn't be as brave as I am now. And I wouldn't know the value of having a voice, considering that I am naturally a very shy person. Like, I literally won't talk in class throughout the whole semester.
Really? I wouldn't have been.
Yeah. No. But to those listening, I know that there will come a time where you will feel like you don't deserve to be, where you feel like you don't deserve to be where you are, or you will feel limited because of the opportunities and resources available in the table. What I can tell you is that if you feel intimidated, know that people in the room were once in your shoes. Therefore, just be confident and know that you're an empowered being capable of changing the world.
Yeah, no, that's a really good way to frame it. And if anything, I think it's so empowering to be the only one who is young or isn't in the same educational background as the other people there, because it proves that you sort of earned a spot there despite being of like a younger age or a different gender or whatever it might be that usually comes in the way of being in those environments. So yeah, anything, that's a cool thing and something you should be so proud of as well.
Oh, thank you. And this is one of the stories that I like to share to people, was that, you know, it's a matter of creating your own opportunities when there aren't available for you.
Yeah, definitely. And so I guess if there's an action item you could give to anyone listening to this episode today, what would it be? It could be something super simple or something that takes more time, more large scale. Could be a New Year's resolution you could suggest to people. Anything.
I guess I would say is what I would say is that to invest in yourself. Mm-hmm. One is because you can't fill the cup of others. You can't fill the cup of others without filling your cup first. Mm-hmm. I would encourage people to dream big and don't be selfish about your opportunities, the knowledge that you have, or your dreams in general. I know I mentioned this before, but confidence and mindset is key. In the society that we currently live, it puts a lot of pressure on us and makes us feel insecure and inadequate most of the times. But please know that you either have to choose between being a follower or a leader. And as you can see, both paths entails challenges and obstacles. Both paths are hard. Therefore, be wise in choosing which path you want to take. Being an activist isn't easy. Being ignorant is also not easy. Living a sustainable life isn't easy. Living a lifestyle that harms the planet, that also has its consequences, isn't easy. Sometimes what gets me going is the thought that what if this is my last year? Living each day as if it is an opportunity is one of the reasons why I am here right now and I'm investing a lot of time volunteering, especially for the climate. I just want everyone to share their wisdom, forgive, and keep in mind that there's no planet B. So live sustainably and take care of Mother Earth. Please, please. Whether it can be as simple as buying something that is sustainable or having these type of conversations in the dinner table or, you know, just with friends. I mean, it does go a long way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Like, it's always hard to read it in the moment. You don't really realize how many people you're actually influencing or affecting. But in the grand scheme of things, your small actions really do have a ripple effect, I think. And you don't know how it might change someone's behavior or how their behavior might change someone else's behavior and just like how that carries on as well.
Yeah, that is definitely true.
So I'd like to know, what does being an activist mean to you?
Activist, activism, those two words. Honestly, I used to be not comfortable of those two words, mm-hmm. most especially being called an activist itself.
Yeah.
Because in the Philippines, where I come from, it has the negative connotation. But then I realized that, you know, how you define something, how people define something doesn't really matter. What matters is how you define something and how, like, what it means to you. And for me, being an activist means unifying and bridging gaps. I know that being an activist usually means, and it's just a stereotype, being an activist usually means attacking a certain opponent, whether it be the government, civil society, organizations, businesses, etc., that go against or do certain injustices. However, I believe in the power of collaboration, empathetic listening, and negotiation. And for me, being an activist means working with the intersectionality of things and developing creative solutions to the world's most pressing issues. Like, for me, that's what it means to be an activist, bridging gaps, seeing the intersectionality of things, educating myself, educating people, empowering others, sharing the knowledge, sharing my experiences. And by far, it has been the most fulfilling journey I've ever taken.
Mm-hmm. I love that definition and how it's like a very inclusive idea of activism as well. And yeah, I like it. Thanks for sharing.
Thank you.
And so I guess finally, what are some resources you would recommend to anyone who wants to learn more about climate change, climate justice, permaculture, or anything else that we have discussed on the podcast today?
Fortunately, we live in a society or generation where everything is just one click away as long as you have Wi-Fi or a device. Mm-hmm. The resources that I go to are Wall Street Journal, IMF blogs, and primary documents, or primary resources itself, because even though communication is very, or like ideas or information is very easily available nowadays, fake news is also readily available. So you can easily be misled. Therefore, it's important to have fact checks once in a while. And aside from these, I talk directly to people. I ask their stories. Mm-hmm. That's why I like to talk to a lot of random people, and people are just like, a lot of people are like, oh my gosh, you're wasting time, you know, talking to people that don't even matter. And I'm just like, what are you talking about? Mm-hmm. Like, we are all connected with each other. What I do affects the other, what the other affects me. So don't even say that, you know, I should be focusing my time on, you know, just reading. Because human connection is very important, most especially if you do humanitarian work. If you want to solve a certain issue, you have to know the stories and put yourself in the shoes of people that are affected. And that's one of the things, the main reasons why I actually relaunched Project Kusaka. was because of my interaction with the community themselves, knowing their challenges, asking them their stories. And by far, it has been great. And lastly, would be social media awareness. Yeah, through Instagram or like Facebook, you know, following people who advocate for certain issues, that can be your daily dose of like facts or what's happening in the world right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely agree. There's so many avenues to receive climate information, and social media is like a quick, easy, digestible way to sort of be exposed to these ideas.
Yeah, I definitely do agree that. Yeah, and also easily. Follow the right people. Like, you know, if you feel like I'm following someone, do it. Like, save yourself. Save your mental state.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Everyday Activist podcast. If you enjoyed it, please be sure to rate and review the show, because that makes a huge difference in helping me get the word of the podcast out. Also, if you have learned anything from this podcast and want to support the show financially, I would be really grateful if you could leave a one-time or monthly coffee donation through the link in the show notes to support the continuation of this show. Thank you again for listening, and I'll see you next Monday.